I just wanted to make sure we remind everybody to stay muted during the presentations. Just there will be time allotted for questions after, just to ensure that everyone's able to hear clearly. And we will go ahead and get started. Wanted to introduce our new commissioner, Jeff Nelson, and he's going to give us a few remarks.
Thank you, Kate. For those of you who don't know Kate, Kate Sidora has been our public information officer for the past 8 years. She is going to be moving into a new role. She's going to be the new director of external and media relations here. She's going to be taking on some of my previous responsibilities. So for things that you used to send me, you can now kind of reach out to Kate for those. And her email address, which we'll put in the chat as well, is kate.sidora, Sidora, at tdi.texas.gov. So good morning. Thank you all for being here with us today. I know I'm probably a familiar face to some of you. I've been with DWC for the past 6.5 years. But for those that don't know, I just would like to introduce myself, give a little bit of my background. I've been in and around the Texas legislature in some form or fashion since 2005. Even when I was in college, I was a Senate messenger for the Texas Senate. I also worked for the UT Systems Government Relations Office. After that, I went to work for my hometown senator, Senator Tommy Williams. I worked for him for about 5 years. I worked on policy issues, including workers' comp and insurance, a lot of TWIA stuff as well. After Senator Williams' office, I went to go work for Governor Rick Perry as his executive aide, both in his official capacity as governor and also for his second presidential campaign. After that is, and where I know many of you from, has been for the last 6.5 years serving as the director of external relations here at the division. This is really where I've dug down deep into workers' comp policy. I feel like I'm somewhat of a subject matter expert, maybe not as much as well as some of you are, but I feel like I have a pretty good grasp of a lot of the issues. And of course, now I'm honored to have been appointed as commissioner by Governor Abbott. So I know a lot of you are kind of hoping to hear about my sort of grand plans for the direction I plan to take the division over the next, several years. But I've been here for 23 calendar days. I'm still kind of reviewing everything, getting a feel for, really dig into the issues that different program areas are dealing with. So I'm really not going to lay out that vision today. But what I can tell you is for the immediate future, I don't plan on making any significant changes. My predecessors, Commissioner Brown, as well as Commissioner Brannon, really made a lot of significant changes to DWC, and they positioned us very well. Commissioner Brown, in particular, set DWC up in a good position with long-term projects that we've been able to work on for the past 11 months that this position has been vacant. And fortunately for me, some of those projects are rather technical in nature, but because I've been involved in them and that I've been working on with our team, I've been able to hit the ground running. And that's sort of been my focus right now, has been these long-term projects that we've had in the works. Just going to go over a few of those real briefly to give you an idea of where my focus has been. For starters, we have our EDI rule and data reporting project that's been in the works for really the past 3 years. This is a reporting standard for insurance carriers to report their EDI information to us. It was a change that was needed. We're currently on the 1.0 standard that's no longer going to be supported. So we are now moving to the 3.1 standard. This, as I said, it's been an ongoing project. The implementation date is scheduled for July of next year. So over the next year, we're going to work with insurance carriers and other stakeholders to try to make this transition as seamless as possible. Another major project that I know a lot of you are aware of that we've been working on have been updates to our designated doctor rules. The designated doctor program is one of the unique and cost-effective programs that our system has at its disposal to receive useful medical examinations to resolve disputes. It's unique compared to other states, and I think it's a great program that we offer. But we are taking efforts to improve that system right now. We're looking to find ways to reduce administrative burdens for designated doctors. We're trying to create reasonable testing requirements for those DDs. And we're also trying to ensure that we get solid designated doctor reports, which I know we all want. This all plays a major role in our current effort to recruit and retain the best doctors that we can find. The other half of this project, which we've sort of been hinting at, but we haven't really been able to go into much detail in until recently, has been changes to the reimbursement policies for designated doctors. One of the major complaints that we've gotten from designated doctors, and the reason they cite the most for leaving the system, has been the fact that reimbursement rates haven't been raised in almost 20 years for DDs. While most of our fee guidelines are tied to Medicare inflation rates and updated every year, designated doctor rates are not. So last week, we put out an informal rule proposal to look at how DDs are reimbursed. Really, the intent of that is to simplify the billing and reimbursement process for everyone while taking into account the time and effort that these designated doctors are putting into these exams and these reports. That rule is currently up for proposal. And if you haven't had a chance to see it, that rule does not include any actual figures. The thought process is we want to conceptually put out what we are thinking, gather some feedback and input, and then we will put out another informal proposal with some actual dollar figures in there. We have a stakeholder meeting coming up on September 8th. So please be aware of that. And I know Mary Landrum is going to go a little bit more into these rule projects later this morning. One other project that I sort of walked right into was our office move. Many of you know our Austin headquarter office has been located out by the airport for the past decade plus. Just 2 weeks ago, we moved in to the new Barbara Jordan building in the Capitol Complex downtown. We are now pretty much right across the street from the Capitol. It's been a great move. Our team was very well prepared for the transition, so that's been rather seamless. One aspect of this that might affect some of you is that our field office is going to be moving here as well. So where we hold dispute proceedings and where we hold sort of other stakeholder meetings are all going to be happening here. And while our offices were ready to be moved into, this building is still very much a construction site. Some of those hearing rooms are not ready. Some of the other big, larger meeting rooms aren't ready yet either. So what that means for now is that in the very short term, proceedings are still going to be held at our old office by the airport. And as we get more information from the Texas Facilities Commission, we will be putting out information on where to park and access to the building. You know, I just kind of want to get this out there now, though, that this is a downtown office building. It comes with all the benefits, but also some of the problems. Parking is not going to be as convenient as it was at the Metro office building where you could park right out front and walk in. That's sort of just a reality of where we're located. The building is great. Parking is not going to be extremely far, but you know, just be prepared for that change. The final project I wanted to mention was updates to our text comp system. This is a big modernization project that we've been working on for years and we will continue to for the next several years. But we are about to roll out a big change that Martha Lueveno is going to talk about more, but it's going to allow any customer to file any documentation with us electronically simply by setting up an online account. So in my previous role, one of the biggest complaints I would get from new stakeholders, as well as legislative offices, was the fact that DWC relied so heavily on fax machines. You know, a lot of people were just frankly shocked that that was still one of our main modes of communications. And the fact that anyone will now be able to set up an account and email us information, I think that's a really big game changer that I hope you all appreciate. The other part of this project is how DDs are going to be scheduling appointments. They're going to be scheduling appointments online rather than through fax back programs. And I think that's a really, hopefully, is a welcome addition from the designated doctor community. And it's really projects like this that I hope to continue focusing on, you know, changes that improve the customer experience for anyone interacting with the division. So those are a few of the projects that I'm focused on right now here at DWC, but I have put a little thought into the future, obviously. But right now, the future for me looks like legislative session. You know, that's my background. It's something I've always been focused on. And even though session starts in January, the work for us has really already begun. You know, last week, our legislative appropriations request was due to the legislature. That's sort of where we give our introductory budget proposal to the legislature for their review. So that was submitted last week. We have a committee hearing coming up in September where we're going to walk through that. We also have had two interim charges going on from the House Business and Industry Committee. Some of you may remember there was a committee hearing on this back in May, but it's something that we're very focused on. Two of their charges that they've asked us to assist with was a review of Senate Bill 22, which was the COVID-19 presumption bill for first responders. And the other is a more general review of first responder workers' comp claims. They have asked us to provide them a report with some of the data that we have and some other studies that we're conducting. And we're planning to submit that to the committee sometime early to mid-fall. Also, with the legislative session coming up, we are statutorily required to send the legislature legislative and statutory change recommendations. It's something we do every 2 years. The report is due to the legislature on December 1st. So that is something we're working on right now. Earlier in the summer, we did solicit input from stakeholders for possible changes that should be made. And those are included in the ideas that we're looking at as we decide what to send to lawmakers this winter. So with session, I thought I'd give you a brief legislative outlook on what we could potentially see. And frankly, I think it's going to be a lot of the same. I think we're going to see a push from first responders to expand their coverage. This could include expanding eligibility for LIBS, which is something that has been filed several sessions in the past. Maybe some additional expansion of presumption statutes, or also broadening the definition of first responder to include other classes of employees in that definition and the added benefits that come with it. I also know there's still a focus on COVID, and the Senate Bill 22 bill that I mentioned, which was a presumption bill, does have an expiration date of September 1, 2023. And I think we will see a push to expand that past that date. A few other things that we could see not related to those topics, things that we could see from last session. We could see a statutory pay increase for designated doctors, which would sort of preempt our rules essentially. We could see a study of our treatment guidelines, or we could see, one bill that was filed last session was a push for 24-hour coverage policies for work and non-work-related injuries. So those are a few of the things we could see during session and a few things that I'm focused on. Again, I've been in this position for 23 days, so bear with me as I sort of do a holistic review of DWC and all our program areas for ways that we can make it more efficient and more effective. I know there are always ways to improve and changes that we can make to adapt to changes in the industry. One thing I can promise, I'm always willing to listen to someone's perspective on an issue. That's sort of been my background, is in compromise and consensus building. So I'm always eager to learn about problems or concerns and possible improvements that we can make. So I'm always available to listen. I'm always, happy to hear ideas and thoughts. We may not always agree in the end, but again, I'm always happy to hear what's going on. So with that, I will turn it over to Deborah Knight so we can really kick this off. Thank you.
Good morning. As the commissioner mentioned, my name is Deborah Knight, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Compliance and Investigations. And so we'll get right into my group. So let's start off with the complaints. We are at the end of the fiscal year, so we're kind of trying to do a roll up. My data goes only to the 15th because we obviously it's just today is the end of the year, but these are pretty good close numbers. So we've had 1,232 complaints that we received, and we've closed 1,255. And we kind of try to put these into buckets, big buckets, just to kind of give an idea of where the complaints are, what the complaints are alleging, or the category they're alleging. And obviously the biggest bucket is communications at 416. We'll talk a little bit about those. If you talk about, because this is the healthcare quarterly, I tried to look at what we thought were what we identified with the complaints that you would be most interested in and the numbers. So we looked at the communication bucket for healthcare providers that are involved with, it looks like, failure to timely file required reports. following a designated doctor exam, the failure to timely make contact prior to a designated doctor, and to change the date of the appointment, and failure to timely file the 69, the DD 69. Then the top confirmed issues, the difference between the confirmed and the received, of course, confirmed complaints are ones that after we investigate them, we confirm that the allegation of an administrative violation is confirmed. The top ones are pursuing a private claim against a workers' compensation injured employee. Still, as far as healthcare providers, seems to be our highest confirmed complaint. And failure to timely file required reports following the DDD is also one of the top ones for our confirmed with healthcare providers. Next slide. So this is just kind of a breakdown of where the, who the complaints are against. The most, if you just go look at the chart, insurance carriers and healthcare providers or communications are the complaints that are complaining about a communication violation against an insurance carrier with communications is 252, healthcare providers 95, and insurance carriers, not surprisingly, indemnity benefits are the highest received complaint for and healthcare providers are 14. Next slide. Okay, so we're gonna talk about PBO. So we know, next slide. So we are statutorily required to perform an assessment, and this is our performance-based oversight is our assessment. We perform an assessment for healthcare providers every other year and carriers the other years. So our next, in 2023, the healthcare provider PBO will be kicked off. We published the methodology paper in July 26, and it's on our website. There was no changes in the methodology or what we were assessing from what we assessed in, or in how we assessed it in the last PBO with healthcare providers. Just big picture, we're looking at the DWC Form 73s. We're looking at two parts of the DW Form 73s. We're looking at the completeness of the form. And when you look at completeness, there a rule 129.5 talks about completeness, but our methodology paper indicates the specific areas that we're gonna look at to determine completeness. That completeness is weighted, it was weighted 30%. And then the other, majority of the 70% of the when we look at the 73s is we're looking at whether or not the documentation supports the off-work status of the injured employee. And that piece of the evaluation or assessment is performed by the Office of Medical Advisor. And so they will have healthcare providers looking at the medical records, the 73, to determine whether or not the off-work status is supported by the documentation. And then the 69s, we're looking at the DDs and the timeliness of the 69s. The forms we're going to be looking at are evaluations that occurred between June 2022 through February 2023. Those will be assessed. A little bit different this year is that we may have physician assistants or those forms completed by physician's assistants and advanced practice registered nurses may be selected for the assessment. And then the weights for the individual measures and overall score, the criteria aren't changed. So the weights aren't changed. And I mentioned those earlier. Next slide. So healthcare provider PBO continued. What do you need to do to get ready? So check and update your text comp provider profile and ensure that the electronic copies of the 73s are available for that time period and read through the methodology paper. I really encourage you to read through the methodology paper. I think it will answer a lot of questions. Next slide. So next steps, what's gonna happen is we're gonna kick off the April 2023 healthcare providers selected. We'll have selected and we'll provide copies of the 73. In the summer of 2023, you'll get a preliminary report, preliminary findings of the assessment. You'll have an opportunity to reply to that and And that will be indicated. The timeline that you have to reply to the preliminary assessments will be indicated in your preliminary findings. And then the results will be published in December 2023. Next slide. Okay, so that's my one area. The other area that that I oversee is the fraud unit. That's both fraud investigations and fraud prosecutions unit. Next slide. So we have a calendar year. So this one was a calendar year because it's just the way the data is right now. For 2022, we've had 751 fraud referrals that we've received. When I say fraud referrals, these are allegations that fraud has occurred in the system by, it's more broad than that. We get a lot of these fraud referrals or allegations that of fraud. Some of those that we get really aren't our system participants. So this number is pretty large. But most of the time, there are a system participant, and that's the allegation. Of those 751, we opened 58 fraud cases. And how we look at to determine what cases to open, one, we look at the actual referrals themselves. And if the facts are stated or true, does it involve a system participant? Does it involve someone that we have authority, a crime that we have authority to investigate? And then we look at, and then from there, we look at the the crimes that have the biggest impact on our system or potentially have the biggest impact on our system. And so we'll look at those. We did close 71 fraud cases during this calendar year, and we referred two for prosecutions. Let's see, next slide, there we go. We also have two indictments. One indictment for an injured employee, and that is a working and drawing case, and that is drawing workers' compensation benefits and working at the same time. And we had an employer, which is a premium fraud case. Next. In calendar year 2022, we had four convictions. It was a healthcare provider was convicted of conspiracy to commit mail fraud. The injured employee was convicted of execution of a document by deception. Basically, it was the working and drawing case. And then we had two employers that were convicted of, and restitution was paid, once again, for it's a premium fraud case. Next slide. So enforcement, that's it. So my last area is enforcement. It's administrative enforcement. So all those complaints that we talked about earlier, if they're confirmed complaints, those are referred to enforcement for prosecution, for review and determine whether prosecution. So the enforcement, next slide. So look at enforcement. We have the calendar year 2022 enforcement cases, just kind of a big picture. We've had 25 were closed during this calendar year, and 407 are still pending as of the date of this slide. The new director for enforcement, Nikki Carr, tells me we're whittling those down by the day. So I think we have less than 407 as of, yesterday we had almost even. Next slide. So of the pending cases, what kind of cases are pending? So there were 81 enforcement, administrative violations, enforcement cases pending against healthcare providers, 320 against insurance carriers, and six others. Others can be everything from attorneys in the system, or employers in the system, but that's who the others are. Next slide. Breaking it down a different way. So of our closed cases, the 84 administrative violations cases were closed against healthcare providers, 231 insurance carriers, and 9 for the other. Next slide. Then of those closed cases, what was the disposition type? What was the result of those administrative actions? A DWC order was for against insurance carriers. We had 115 and 23 healthcare providers and 3 other. Warning letters are 110 for carriers and 56 for healthcare providers and 4 others. And then you see the others. Next slide. So this is, we do post all those orders. We post those on our website, and this is the link to the website where you can see all the orders and penalties attached to those. Next slide. So it's questions. And I know, I think we're waiting to the end for questions. So then I will turn it over to, who am I turning it over to? Kate, you're on.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I believe it's
next Mary. Slide.
Yeah. Just Mary. Do next slide. Next slide to help. There you go, Mary.
There you go. Mary's next.
That's the way to do it.
Good morning, everybody. So today I am wearing actually my hat as the director for the designated doctor program. And as such, my presentation today will be focused on three topics. The first topic is in reference to chapter 127. That rule project, which includes rule 180.23. As many of you know, over the summer, a second informal proposal was made. Comments were received. We have reviewed those comments. And if you've submitted some of those comments, we definitely appreciate your feedback. We are in the process of drafting a formal proposal addressing comments received. While I don't necessarily have a specific timeline, just know it is very possible that this rule could be adopted by the end of calendar year 22, but it is a project that we continue to work on. So stay tuned for more information. The second topic, the much anticipated billing and reimbursement informal rule proposal. So as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, an informal proposal was announced last week. If you have not seen this informal proposal yet, I definitely invite you to visit our rule webpage, where you will find five different documents associated with this informal proposal. The first document is a memo announcing the proposal. And that memo is important because it also announces that a stakeholder presentation will be held next week. The second document is the proposed amendments to certain sections of Chapter 133. So this is where we start addressing billing elements of the designated doctor rules. The third document is the proposed amendments to certain sections of Chapter 134. There's also a table providing current language, proposed language, and notes about those proposed changes. I've heard some feedback already that I think the table is somewhat helpful because you're able to see the current and the proposed all at the same time. And so hopefully that will make it easier for your review. And then the last document is a document that provides you with various designated doctor exam billing examples, showing how the CMS 1500 generally is filled out today based on current rules and based on the proposed language, how we believe that's going to change so that you can see, hopefully, that we have made changes that will make it easier for designated doctors. The comment period for this informal rule ends on September 23rd. And as mentioned earlier, there is a stakeholder presentation that will be made next week, September the 8th, scheduled at 1:30 via Zoom. So I hope that we will see you there. The purpose for that presentation really is to discuss the updated amendments to the rule language and obtain some feedback from system participants. If you do plan on attending, I encourage you to review all those documents because I think it will make it a lot easier to follow. Because again, as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, these rules tend to be very technical in nature. And so one can get confused very easily. So that's that. The other thing too is that as you review the documents, there's two things that I do want you to keep in mind. The first, the focus for this informal proposal was really the billing structure. Again, as Commissioner Nelson mentioned, you will not see fees in this proposal. Okay. We believe that we need to address the billing structure first. And once we can agree on what that needs to look like, then we can go ahead and move on to the reimbursement. The second thing I'd like you to think about or keep in mind is that while we keep calling this a DD proposal, it affects more than designated doctors. So there are edits that are going to impact RME doctors, and those doctors that are authorized to certify MMI and assign impairment ratings, whether as a treating doctor or referral doctor. And because of that, it's the part of the reason why we laid out the rules the way we did by role. So just keep those two things in mind as you review these documents. And again, I hope to see you on September the 8th. And then the last topic, it's in reference to text comp enhancements, which mostly is affecting designated doctors. So you probably have heard whether Joe McElrath, my boss, or myself over the last few months, just talking about some changes coming to text comp. Well, last week, the announcement was made that these changes will go in effect Monday, September the 19th. The enhancements will mostly affect designated doctors, and certainly in a positive way, okay? And the reason I say that is because they will have the ability to manage their designated doctor appointments, as those appointments will be offered via the designated doctor's text comp profile. So what does this mean? This means no more faxing. So typically, I mean, right now, we offer those appointments by faxing them to the designated doctor or their scheduling company. And then the doctor then sends their response to us faxed again. So that's going to go away. The other enhancements will allow the designated doctor to also submit requests for assistance with medical records if they have not received those from carriers or treating doctors. It will also allow the designated doctors to request additional time to submit their designated doctor reports and allow the designated doctors to file their designated doctor reports, the narrative and the forms like the 68, the 73, the 69 online through the designated doctor's text comp profile. So this is really exciting for us. We can't wait until this takes place. And because these are new enhancements, over the next 2 weeks, there will be a series of training sessions that will be held via Zoom to train the designated doctors. I mean, that's our main focus, but RME doctors and doctors authorized to certify MMI will also be invited to some of these general sessions. So with that, that includes my presentation. And I believe, again, we're holding questions to the end. So I'm going to turn it over to Martha Levino, Director of Enterprise Automation Services.
Good morning, everybody. I'm going to go over briefly today, just kind of playing off of what Mary started talking about for designated doctors. I'm going to take it back a little more general. To talk about document upload in general for all stakeholders and documentation. So first slide. Filing online is coming soon. So I believe that launch date is somewhere in the middle of September as well. I think it probably is the September 19th date where the designated doctor enhancements are gonna be done. But again, you know, this is a little bit different than what Mary is talking about because it's a little more general. And it's available to any stakeholder that wants to send any document to the Division of Workers' Compensation. So really, really exciting news here. But don't look for it now. Wait until that September 19th date. If you're signed up for reminders from the division, you might want to pop in on the website or to text comp around mid-September and maybe give this a try. It is a really, really cool feature and testing. It looks really great. And it will allow you to file forms and documents up through text comp. Now, one of the advantages of this general file online function is that you do get an immediate acknowledgement for your records. I know that that's something that's very important to everyone, especially if you're filing an official document. This ability to upload a document is going to be available 24 hours a day, but there are a few technical specifications that you need to keep in mind before you try this feature. You must have a text comp login. So even though this feature is available to everybody, if you have not established the text comp login before, you're going to have to establish one to take advantage of this function. Now you can upload Word documents, Excel documents, PDFs, and TIFF files. So we do take a variety of files, but nothing else. So you may get a failure or an error if you try to upload something like a zip file or something else that is not accepted through this feature. There is a file size limit of 10 kilobytes. So you have to keep that in mind when you're uploading documents. Again, compressed or zip files are not accepted. And multiple files, if you upload more than one file at once, and you can do that and describe to us what kind of documents they are, but they cannot be named the exact same thing. Okay, so each file that is uploaded at that one upload time must have a different name. Next slide. Okay, so if you go to TextComp, I just wanna kind of walk you through the very basic steps of doing this function, very simple steps. You go to TextComp, you log on. Again, there's a note about that you have to have a login. You look for the upload documents on the menu on the left-hand side of TextComp. You can upload your forms and documents in the category that applies. So this helps us recognize where those documents need to go and where they and who needs to see them. So it's very important to choose the correct category. And then you simply click the submit button and view, print, and save your acknowledgement. So very simple steps. In the next couple of slides, we're going to give you a little preview of what this looks like in TextComp. So next slide, please. All right, so this is a sort of a little snippet of the upload screen. And you see there that you have different categories of documents. And then I'll bring your attention to the last two on that little list. You see any other DWC form or any other document type. So those are very, very broad categories that you can use to file other kinds of forms. Now, we do ask that you name the file. If it does relate to a specific claim, please name that file with the claim number, the DWC assigned claim number, a name, you know, something that will help us identify easily and get that document to where it needs to go. But you see the select file buttons in this particular example. We did a fictional upload of a 73, and you see the description that we used for our document. It was a TIFF, and you can see when you have the one file attached. After this step, you would just click the submit button on the bottom left hand, and then you would receive your acknowledgement. Next screen. So this is what an acknowledgement is going to look like. So you have your date and time stamp, the name of the person that uploaded it, and if you have an organization name, that will also appear. And then some further, you know, details, high level details of the document that you provided to the division. So again, you know, I invite everybody to try this feature before you think about faxing something. You might want to just give this a try. Next slide, please. Now, we do think that there might be some problems. We're hoping that there aren't any, but we do have two different support email boxes that you should be using if you have problems with this feature. If you have problems with the upload itself, you want to email efilinghelp@tdi.texas.gov. And if you need help creating a TextComp profile or updating your TextComp profile, you can go ahead and file email TextCompHelp@tdi.texas.gov. Both of these email boxes will be monitored by multiple staff, and you should get a response within one business day. So please keep that in mind. That's all I have. Thank you very much for your time.
Pass it over to Greg, medical fee dispute.
Good morning, everybody. I am the director of medical fee dispute, and since we're at the end of the fiscal year 2022, I was going to go over the numbers and types of disputes that we've received and adjudicated in this fiscal year. Next slide. So that's, y'all been very busy the last couple of days. It's instead of 2,666 disputes received, it's well over 2,800 now. So, but we have received 2,800 disputes so far in fiscal year 2022. The most common types of disputes are division specific, which would include designated doctor disputes, professional, and facility. Those are our top three most common types of disputes that we receive. And that's traditionally the top three types of disputes that we've had over the past 10 years. There was a time from 2017 to 2019 when pharmacy was by far the most common dispute that we had. We would receive 2,000 or 3,000 of those disputes per year. That we did make a change to the Texas Administrative Code, and it did take care of most of those pharmacy disputes. But we do have, did receive 2,800 disputes in fiscal year 2022. Next slide. Okay, so we've closed 2,537 disputes so far. It pretty much mirrors the numbers that we've received. We're closing disputes just as pretty much quickly as soon as they come in. The average number of days it takes to receive a dispute, send it to the insurance carrier, and close it is 75 days this year. So a little bit over 2 months, we're able to get a dispute in and get it out and have some sort of resolution for it. The only one that category that was on this, the previous slide and not on this one, is going to be air ambulance. All of those disputes are still being abated at this time. As far as the types of closures, 48% of the disputes that we've closed this year have been closed by withdrawal. So we receive the dispute from the healthcare provider, we send it to the insurance carrier, the insurance carrier reconsidered the disputed services and paid. And so the healthcare providers just went ahead and closed those disputes. So we did not need to actually issue a decision on half of our actual disputes that we've received. It was taken care of without actually having to go through the decision process. One other thing, when we do close a dispute, if it is a decision, we will fax that to you, to the healthcare provider, to the number that you provide us on the DWC 60 form, which is the form for filing a fee dispute. That is a change in the last couple of years. Previously, we actually mailed those through ground to the healthcare providers. Next slide. So the disputes received and closed per year, this is for the last 5 years. In 2018 and 2019, that was the end of the pharmacy bump that we had in the number of disputes received. So in the last 3 years, it has been pretty steady, just under 3,000 disputes received and closed each year. Next slide. I'm not sure if everybody is aware, but in the past year, we did put in a new decision search tool on the division's website. All decisions that MFDR issues must be posted to the website. And so we did put in this tool. Previously, it was just long lists of like thousands of actual dispute decisions by the MFDR tracking number. So with this tool, you can actually search by five different categories: the tracking number, the date received, the date issued, the requester, the healthcare provider, and the respondent or insurance carrier. There is a search bar where you could actually put in. In this example, we searched for anything that Baylor had put in. So there are, you know, 164 entries of the 15,891 that it brought up. You can actually export all of this to an Excel file as well. So this is a very useful tool for you. A couple of things about it. If you're searching for something that is not one of those five categories, you can do a Google search, a targeted search, and it will still come up. Say you're looking for any disputes that are over the 95-day filing deadline, you can do a Google search for 95-day and it will bring up any of those disputes. It is only decisions that have been issued from 2014 to the present. If you're looking for a decision that was issued prior to 2014, we will have it in an archive. You can send an email to MDR Inquiry and we'll get you that decision within a day. it is only decisions and not dismissals or withdraws. So if you're looking for something that was dismissed, it won't be actually on this search tool. It is only for decisions. And then it's also about a month's lag time after that we issue a decision before it's actually posted to the website. We do have to take a little bit of time to make sure that it's redacted in its entirety and there's no confidential information. Next slide. The electronic submission of disputes. Prior to February of 2021, MFDR was a paper-only process. You had to put in the disputes on paper. We did everything through paper. In February 2021, we updated the administrative code to allow for healthcare providers to put in disputes via fax, encrypted email, or through secure file transfer protocol. On the fax, we do get a lot of disputes in through fax now. One thing to keep in mind is 50 pages seems to be the magic number for having problems with the fax. If you are a healthcare provider who has a lot of medical records with your disputes, fax may not be the best way to go. The secure file transfer protocol, that probably is your best bet. If you are a high volume requester and your disputes are voluminous in medical records. So if you do want to set up an SFTP box, just contact the division and we can help you out with that. Next slide. So reminders for filing fee disputes. We ask that you use the most recent DWC 60 form, which can be downloaded on our website. In the past 10 years, we've updated that form 4 times, and we're still getting disputes in the 2012 form. We do accept those disputes, but we do ask that you use the most recent form. If you are submitting paper disputes, because you still can put in disputes via paper, only one copy is required. Prior to COVID, we required 2 copies of the paper disputes because we sent the second paper copy to the insurance carriers for response. We still do get paper disputes in. It's been about 20% of the total disputes that we've been receiving that is going down. So it was a lot more than 25% until the last couple of months. But if you are putting in paper disputes, you only need one copy. So you can save yourself a little bit of postage and paper costs by only putting in one copy because that's all that's required now. If you are delivering or sending in the disputes through FedEx, UPS, you cannot send it to the actual PO box. The PO box is a U.S. Postal Service only. And previously, y'all had been sending that to the old address at Metro 7551 Metro. You do need to start sending them to this actual address, 1601 Congress Avenue. So we have updated that on our website if you do need that. And at this point, they are still forwarding anything that goes to 7551 Metro to the division. But in the future, everything needs to be sent to 1601 Congress. And that's all I have. So I'll throw it back to Kate for QA.
Open it up for anybody that has questions. And I will send out the where you can get the slides on the website once we get those posted through the chat. Okay. I think we were going to have some closing with the commissioner.
Okay, so I guess there's no questions. We really do hold these meetings for y'all, and we do value your feedback and input. So please, if you do have any questions, let us know. You can also always reach out to us. You know how to get a hold of most of us after the meeting. I did just want to echo a few things. Greg just said our address has changed, like I touched on. So please, for those medical fee disputes, go to the website and make sure you're using that new address, because at some point that mail that's going to our old address is no longer going to be forwarded on to us. Also, as Mary mentioned, on the designated doctor rules, we really have 2 sets of rules. We have the first set that we've been working on for several months now, which is about the administrative burdens, the testing, some of the qualifications, things like that. my intention, as Mary kind of alluded to, is to get that finished and adopted by the end of the calendar year. So that's my intention with that. On the reimbursement part of the designated doctor rule, I think we want to take a methodical approach to this. We know it's a big issue for everyone involved in it. We're going to do this round of informal, and then we're going to do a second round of informal, and then we'll sort of assess where we are. So there may be a longer tail on that, but it's something we will continue to work on to try to get something done. And then, as Martha said about the document upload, we are very excited about it. I think it's going to be a really good change for everyone involved, for just that ability to send an email rather than find a fax machine and send something in. I think is going to be really helpful. But again, we are just implementing this on the 19th. There will probably be hiccups, so bear with us as that's going on. Let us know what the problem is so we can get it fixed. But again, that's something we are really excited about. And then, as Kate mentioned, the slides and this video will be posted on our website on the events page, I believe. So if you are looking for any of these slides, they will be posted in there. And if there aren't any other questions, I appreciate everyone coming. Thank you.